Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
My husband, Jacob Chapman, is here.
Yeah, we got married.
We got married on Saturday.
Yeah.
You're my husband now.
Yeah. Pretty great.
It's great. I love you.
I love you, too.
All right. Good times. Okay, so we've been off for about a month, and I'm sorry about that, genuinely. We tried to tape a show on the show ReZero. For like 2 weeks.
Yes.
And it was cursed. The first time my audio got fucked up. Mm-hmm. The second time, you were sick.
No, that was the third time.
The second time we attempted a show live and it didn't quite go our way. And then the third time you were like, you had strep throat.
Yes.
You had strep fucking throat. It was no joke.
Mm-hmm.
That was garbage. And took you down for the entire like weekend right before our wedding.
Weekend,
which was
like full weekend.
It was like a week, like right before we got married. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But it was good timing because like if you were going to get super sick, that was the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's fine. But we're happy to be back.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a ReZero show at some point. I gotta be honest, after failing that many times in a row, I'm not chomping at the bit to revisit it, but maybe we'll get back to it at some point. Who knows?
We'll see what happens.
For the time being, I have plans for this show.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next month or so, we are going to turn this show into... We're going to finally turn on the cameras. We're going to set up cameras for Jacob and I. We're going to make a little set here in our office, and we're going to take this show over to YouTube, and we're going to do it live with cameras there, and we'll have, you know, guests and stuff. It's
fuck
not
it.
Going to be...
We'll do it live.
Yeah, fuck it, we'll do it live, basically. We plan on doing it on YouTube, that'll be that. We feel like that would be fun and, sort of the direction that the podcast should have gone in, like, probably a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, should be a good time. I also think that'll make it a lot, easier for us. Mm-hmm. to do this, on a week-to-week basis, because flipping the camera on and talking is a little bit easier than a lot of other things. So, the MP3... version of this will still exist as it always has. It's going to be basically the same show. There will just be a video component that you could also
tune in,
watch if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us are terrified.
Boston and Olive on camera.
Well, neither of us are terrified of the camera anymore. So you know, it's good to get out there in front of it again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be good times. Anyway, we have a whole season of anime to talk about.
It is a big season. Yeah.
Preview guide started October 1st-ish. No,
mm-hmm.
September 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of shows.
Yeah, no.
As always. It's a pretty good season this time, I think.
I think so. It's a high interest season. So for those who know, like, when we do our daily streaming polls for what people want to see covered week to week, usually we have, like, the biggest show will pull in, like, 50 or 60% of the voting block, which is thousands of people, and then the next couple biggest shows will be like 40 or 30% or whatever, and then quickly you get down to 20%, etc. Which is still a lot of people. Like 20% of thousands is a lot, and we definitely cover those. But you know, it's a steep drop off, is what I'm saying, from whatever the most anticipated thing is to other stuff. This time we had like a couple things poll at above 50 to 60%. I had the two biggest things, which were Izetta and Yuri on Ice. And then after that, like, eight to nine things that pulled over 30% into 40%, and it's just a lot. Like, there's a it's a high interest season. There's a lot of different things that people are invested in.
Yeah.
So we're glad we were able to cover so much of it. We're basically we're covering 28 shows, which is a lot. Like, and people are like, oh, 30 last season. Yeah, but one of those was Danganronpa. It was really 29. So we just went from 29 to 28.
Okay.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because Danganronpa is like, yes, it's two shows, but
it was one, yeah.
It was like a 26-episode season that aired in one season.
Yes, exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. So yeah, that was interesting.
So 28 is a lot.
Yeah, 28 is plenty. And we'll see what that number is in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't really know how things are going to go down moving forward. But mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of anime.
Yes.
And I watched plenty of it. So I was primarily getting our wedding together over the last week. But I had time to watch stuff. And since Tuesday or so, I've been catching up on premieres.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a ton of stuff. You've watched everything.
Yes.
I think.
At least the first episode of everything except the final show, which is not aired.
Which is an Amazon thing, and who knows when that's going to even show up.
Yeah.
Like, I got to tell you, that's really annoying.
It is.
I hated it when Funimation used to do things this way, because Funimation used to do things this way.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, they would license a ton of shit, not tell us when it's coming out. It wouldn't have anything to do with the premiering schedule,
mm-hmm.
and they would just randomly drop shit in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
On like the show airs Monday, they would randomly drop it like
Wednesday,
a week later on a Wednesday 5 at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And we're like,
goddamn.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah. So, and
not only that, like, not, and like, I understand, like, the argument, like, oh, well, you're journalists, like, you have to keep up with this stuff, and, like, they can't be expected to do, like,
of course,
you can't market a show when
yeah.
you're launching it and no one has any idea when it's available. Like,
the big issue is marketing.
Yeah. Marketing is always the big issue. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you were saying.
I wasn't saying much of anything. It's just that Amazon having the Noe Tamina exclusives is pretty annoying because they do not advertise it even a little
yeah.
bit. There's really their search function is really difficult to navigate. I can't just say, like, okay, on Funimation and Crunchyroll, I can go to a page that'll show me what their newest anime editions are. Amazon Prime Video, you can't really do that. Like, there is an anime page, but it also includes...
It's just catalog.
...newly released toys.
Yeah.
Even in the Amazon Prime Video, I'm like, no, video only.
Yeah.
Streaming video only. It'll show you, like, comic book toys and stuff like that that are just lumped into anime
yeah.
on Amazon.
Suicide Squad Joker with comic accurate back tattoo is
yeah,
right
and
there
it's like,
next
no,
year.
I'm just looking
yeah.
for a new streaming anime. I know you've added, like, one
yeah.
thing that I need
yeah.
to find.
Totally.
It's yeah. pretty bad.
No, it's bullshit. So hopefully they'll get their act together on that and start telling us when these things are going to air. Like, it's not that hard. Just like, hey, we licensed it. We spent however much money, whatever the minimum crazy minimum guarantee they gave the studio for that.
Mm-hmm.
So just tell, okay, it's going to come out at 9 p.m. on Thursday. All right. Yeah. How hard is that?
Yeah.
Put out a press release. Anime News Network will post your press release.
We will.
That's like free advertising.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
Tell us when it's going to air.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's like, this is the demographic that cares. Like,
yeah, we
know,
give a shit. Let us give
Tamina.
A shit.
Noe Tamina is not always Cabinary of the Iron Fortress. Sometimes it is things like Battery that, you know, this niche audience is going
help,
to care.
You have to help us give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to help us give a shit. Anyway, there were a bunch of premieres. Let's go through them. That's what we
yeah,
do at the beginning of these
there's
seasons.
So many.
We're going to go through
a lot
these
of interesting
premieres.
Ones. A lot to discuss.
Yeah, we're going to go through these premieres, and we got a bunch of Twitter questions, and we're going to take some questions from you fine folks who showed up for the chat. Thanks to everybody who came by. Okay. Let's start with Drifters.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this?
It's kind of too early for me to say. I feel like I need a couple more episodes.
Are you going to watch more?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Okay. Because I think I might just skip over to reading the manga, like skip a couple chapters. Because so this is the new Kota Hirano thing. It's based mm-hmm. on his manga that comes out like one chapter every 10 years or whatever.
Yeah. Because of the way he draws it.
Right. And the premise is basically historical figures get displaced into fantasy world that has like elves in it, and it's like Oda Nobunaga and like. A couple of other famous people from...
A legendary archer guy.
Yeah, people from the Sengoku period in Japan that I'm not that interested in. And,
yeah.
and never really have been. And so, like, it turns out the entire thing is just, like, for Sengoku nerds.
A little
like,
bit, yeah.
Which Hirano is totally a Sengoku nerd, but I'm just not into that. And I really didn't expect it to be, like, that hardcore. Like, this is for these people. Now, somebody on Twitter was saying, hey, it introduces more characters later on.
Right.
There's like a lot of different people from world history and stuff. No, like U.S. presidents, which is of course what I would want to see.
Right.
But there's a, you know, a bunch of other characters, and like that sounds kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But the like 10 minutes of this episode was not funny humor about Sengoku trivia,
right?
Which was just not my
thing. Or drama. The drama. So that's the interesting thing about it, and the thing about it is that it's kind of similar to what was done in Helsing, but more people are familiar with vampire legends and vampire lore. But Helsing also did this minimal writing approach where people's character development and their backstory and stuff like that is explored through them talking about their history as if you already know it. They don't tell you what Vlad the Impaler's backstory is. They just expect you to understand why.
They do eventually. Alucard,
they do a little bit, but and they probably will a little bit in this. But they do start out by having his they do start out by having his personality basically. And him explaining his emotions in a way that is supposed to be like immediately you understand because you know the story of Oda Nobunaga, and we don't. Like, at least, I mean, I know some of it. I know more of it than I do the other characters whose names I can't even remember off the top of my head. But yeah, the thing I found interesting about it was that even though this is not a story about vampires, he managed to reintroduce the central, like, emotional thrust of Helsing is the psychology of vampirism and human monsters and humans turned monster and, like, what that does to you psychologically and how people feel about it. He managed to reintroduce that in Drifters, even though these are not vampires. They are, like, historical figures who end up in a fantasy world, but he's still like, all of my legacy is lost like dust on the battlefield of blah, blah, blah.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, this is vampire psychology again, which I thought was fun, but, but yeah, mostly Drifters, I'm just like, I'm waiting to see where this goes, because apparently there will be, like, Russian revolutionaries and Hitler and shit like that showing up later, so we'll see what happens.
Hitler?
Hitler, yes.
He was in the last thing, though.
Yeah, but that was not literal Hitler.
I'll give you a break.
That was not literal Hitler. This
was
literal Hitler.
They took the mustache off.
Yeah.
And called him someone else.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, the first time it was...
If I erase this mustache, exactly. Name him the
first
Fuhrer.
Time it was blonde, not Hitler cyborg. This is no just Hitler. So, we'll see what happens.
Only so many Hitlers to go around.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure I'm going to watch more of it. I will wait until you tell me what whether or not it's good. But mm-hmm. I love the way it looks. It looks great. I feel like they kind of got how to do Kota Hirano for TV.
Right, because
finally.
It's difficult, yeah. And the CG wasn't
tough.
Bad in it.
Yeah,
they
no, it was,
how to
it
put
was
the
fine.
CG in there so it wasn't so awkward.
Yeah. It was fine. That I'm going to wait and see. The first one just lost me. I was like, man, I don't care about Sengoku.
Right. I felt the same way. It was like, oh, I don't know this stuff, so I'm not immediately emotionally invested in what they're talking about.
Okay, why don't you pick the next one?
Well, I think we should definitely talk about the most anticipated show of the season, which is Izetta, the Last Witch.
Okay, was that the most anticipated? That's the one everyone was the most excited about?
No, though it generated the most discussion afterward, and it got the most votes in the poll, and it was...
Okay, right, the most liked.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't say, because I didn't hear that much about it
before. Even before the poll went up, I picked it as the image for the poll, because I was like, this is probably the biggest thing, and it was. So, yeah, there you go.
What do you think?
So far it's okay. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I am very, very familiar with the writer's work. I know that this is his passion project. Like,
this
the director,
is the Code Geass guy.
There's like four or five Code Geass guys, so when you say that, people might think of a different person. You should think more specifically, this is the Maihime and Guilty Crown and Seikon no Quasar guy.
Seikon no Quasar guy is the real... That's,
he wrote the manga.
That's the phrase you want to use when describing Seikon no Quasar guy. Because if you say Code Geass, that could be anyone.
Yeah, that's like,
but if
Code
you
Geass
narrow it down
people.
To the breast milk show guy, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, so if you've seen any of those, you know kind of what his... A Guilty Crown was also Ichiro Okuchi, who is... has his own proclivities.
Somebody in the chat, I just want to point this out. Someone in the chat says he's the Ren Daughters of Nemosity sign.
Yeah.
Which, whoa. All right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's a schlock peddler. Yeah, he's a schlock peddler, but he knows how to entertain an audience. It's not like any of his stuff can be accused of being boring per se, except maybe Guilty Crown. But like, yeah, he's just schlock peddler, and so I know his aesthetic very well, and I know that what they are pushing in this is a girls are gonna kiss, maybe bit their kiss tragically on the battlefield sort of a thing, and so and the opening theme literally has the girl like. Is thrusting her butt in front of the camera and then like dragging her finger down her lips and down her throat superimposed over a rail gun that then drips water, so it's a pre-cum rail gun.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, so I know what this is, but I say all of that, the first two episodes actually aren't offensive like at all. really. You can kind of see the, you can see the subtext that I just described.
I feel like at any moment, I feel like it's balancing on the edge of like a vat of like,
any second it's going to get horribly disgusting.
The camera keeps like almost staying too long and almost like it's
very subtle.
Right there.
It's all very subtle. I mean, the fact that she rides a gun and she rides a gun like she would a broom.
I thought the second episode was boring.
Really?
The first episode was kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. The second episode was kind of boring. Like, not that much happens in it. Mm-hmm. And so I'll still watch it. I'm just going to watch it week to week. I'll just keep up with it. Mm-hmm. But the second episode lost me a little bit. I needed to be paced a little fast. I hope it's not one of these where anime original means we had 2 hours of story and we stretched it out to 12, mm-hmm. which seems like it's happening a lot with anime original stuff.
Right.
Like, we're only going to get 12 episodes. So, like, it's tough to write scripts where, like, that's the exact amount of story you have to tell. And I get that. But it's a balancing act. Mm-hmm. And since the second episode was already, like, super slow-paced and, like, two things happen, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I don't know. Also, yeah, it seems like it's... Also, they flash back to the same shit over and over and over again. They flash back to, like, the defining events of this, like, three times. And they add, like, a new frame of information every time they flash back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, okay, get to a little bit of the point.
Right.
You only have 10 episodes left on this one.
I think what they're trying to do and what I think they're successful at doing, like I said, I call this guy a schlock peddler, but it's not like he's incompetent per se. He knows how to entertain an audience. It just, not so much writing a good thing, but like he knows how to captivate an audience. I didn't find the second episode boring personally, but...
I know I'm probably an outlier on that one. You know, but the first one was exciting. the second one was like, oh, mm-hmm. all right.
Well, the second one was entirely based around trying to build up chemistry between them and explain why they...
Why they're going to kiss later.
Yeah, why they're going to kiss later. And, or not kiss, almost. And the witch in question, like, is building up the fact that she has no self-esteem and everybody hates her because she's a witch and that, like, basically she gets all of her self-esteem from this princess. And so that is most of what the second episode was based around. It's like, okay, I understand, you're fully establishing this, but, like, where are you going to go with it? Who knows?
Yeah, it's got, like, it... Okay. The premise is all right. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the players and where they're gonna, what the characters are gonna do. I want to know what's gonna happen, so I'll definitely keep watching it. I don't want to sound like I'm too down on it because it's a pretty good show. Like it's entertaining. You know, it's
entertaining.
All right.
I wouldn't go to good, but yeah, entertaining.
Okay, well, all right. We can mince words here.
No, purely on story. I'm saying nothing about the story has reassured me that I'm going to be like really engaged with it. It's more. I feel like more. I'm gonna be like, oh, come on. You know, while being entertained as people ride guns, that kind of a thing. You know,
you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I can't help it. I'm very familiar
you're
with
you're in shoe drop observation mode.
Right. So, but it's
laser-like,
but
it's focus on
solid.
The other shoe.
Yeah, but you know, this is
convinced
the kind of
it's
stuff,
up there.
This is the kind of stuff that grabs people. It is the big, slightly schlocky, over-the-top...
you know what it needs? You know, a crazy cliffhanger, oh my gosh, what's going to happen, ending every episode.
It does. It needs that, yeah.
It needs that. Mm-hmm. Then I'd be like, whoa, what's going to... Like, then it'd be great.
Right, but I can absolutely see why this has grabbed people. It's not even subtle about being alternate history thing. Like, literally, they just changed the names of things, but it's straight up literally history of World War II. So, you know.
Yeah.
With Witch in it. But yeah.
Totes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll definitely watch... I'm just going to watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Unless it totally loses me, mm-hmm. I'll just keep watching it.
Right.
All
right.
So the show that I loved.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I loved it. I really can't wait for the next one. Is Girlish Number. Yeah. Girlish Number, yes.
Girlish Number, mm-hmm. Which was kind of a surprise.
I wrote down Girlish Figure.
No, that's
who
Izetta.
Who could blame me?
That's Izetta.
Who could blame me?
Yeah, that one came as a surprise, I think, to people that didn't really look at the credits and just saw the PV. Like, they're like, okay, idol. Like, they saw the word idol.
And yeah, like, okay. So, like, cynicism... So this is a cynical show about the idol industry where every character in it is a dickhead.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Kind of.
I found them all to be relatable.
Yes.
It's a gentle... It's gently mean-spirited, hard-edged cynicism. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's not super mean. It's a little mean. It's kind of like, hey, everybody is on the take here. Everyone's on the take. Mm-hmm. None of this is particularly sincere. Is that a bad thing? I don't know, but it sucks to work with it. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's a cutthroat business full of kind of bad
people. It's not like, fuck this industry, burn this earth, like some stuff might be. It's more like, well, this isn't exactly the magical experience you might have thought it was, but these are still people doing their best.
Well, yeah, I liked the main character a lot, the girl. Uh-huh. I thought she was funny. I found her to be relatable and like, oh, like she's like, that personality seemed pretty on point to me.
Yeah.
Like, looking out for herself, and the show didn't seem like it was shaming her for that. It seemed like it was like, this is what an idol's got to do.
Right. The guy who wrote this is the guy who wrote My Teen Rom-Com's Nephew. He is a good character writer. Like, he is good at, like, empathizing with his characters and really digging into their psychology without falling back on stereotypes. And my biggest issue with Snafu was that I found the dialogue absolutely interminable. It's sort of Whedon-y, where everybody.
See,
is.
I thought it was funny. Like, I love
Girlish
that she
Numbers
was
dialogue's
like...
fine. It's not it, Girlish Numbers dialogue. I should clarify is nothing like Snafu's dialogue.
Oh, okay.
I think it's because it was a light novel. But in Snafu, everybody's literally nobody says anything that's not like trying to put down and overanalyze and cut up what the person before them said. It's like a Joss Whedon sort of a thing, where everybody's super snarky and nobody's really emotionally honest, and it gets really annoying and everybody sounds the same. But Girlish Number just sounded natural, so I think maybe when he was writing a script for, like, a TV, he's like, okay, maybe not the prose.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which is
also seems to have it in for light novels, mm-hmm. which is funny, because it's a multimedia project where there is a light novel. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not based on that novel. There's a novel, but it's not based on that. Mm-hmm. This is a separate project that's just kind of the same. It's one of these multimedia
projects.
It's
one of those, like, what if the main character was an idol of this book that you may have read?
Right.
That's being launched on its own. It's kind of like that. And they emphasize, like, the whole synergy thing is not particularly well thought out and is mostly based on, this girl's pretty, why don't we try to synergize this property?
Yeah, these two things are popular, mash them together, and we can't
and
lose.
They're very, very upfront about how stupid this is.
Well, and they all have, like, comical laughs, like, ha, 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 we're going to make some money. The only thing about it that I don't really like too much is the Kyon character, the put-upon brother, who's also her agent, because it could go, A, creepy places, and B, put upon guy between in the middle of it all is wiser than everyone and is set up to be like the bon mot deliverer who's like the calm, like that
the hot
sigh, I am calm and collected, I am cool and calm, when everyone else is like, mm-hmm. I am crazy and stupid, and he's like, but I'm here to be cool and as a contrast to you. And mm-hmm. I don't like it when they make the whole world perfect for one guy to always be the right, like, calm, cool-headed guy.
Right, Hachiman.
I don't like, I don't like it when they do that, because that's not how life is. Uh-huh. And, like, it makes it unrealistic. Like, this show with all this realistic, these realistic attitudes, believably flawed, kind of fucked up, cynical characters, if suddenly the whole world, like, the Red Sea's part in order to prove this guy the most level-headed and correct guy in the world, mm-hmm. I'm not going to buy it anymore.
I don't think that that's going to happen. I'm not sure he'll ever be shown as having flaws, but unlike Hachiman and Snafu, he's not the protagonist. He is sidelined. And I did really like, regardless of the brother-sister thing, I actually thought that it was a good idea to make the agent her brother, because I think they're doing it explicitly because she could not get work otherwise. They show that she's lazy. She just kind of likes the idea of being a star.
Yeah, yeah. But she's kind of a fuck-up, but she wants to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And she's only getting these parts because literally her relative is just pushing out favors trying to get her these parts. Which I thought was important, because otherwise if she just had an agent, like, it didn't seem like she has enough ambition to have her own agent per se.
Yeah.
So her brother is doing this for her because he cares about her. And, but yeah, like, I liked it a lot. I was like, this has a ton of promise.
I'm looking forward
to
the next one.
My only worry is the framing, because I had such an issue with the framing in Snafu. Not because it was bad, but because it was a little egocentric and above it all. Like,
I don't like that.
And so, but I mean, like, I have faith in this guy as a character writer. I have faith in his sense of humor and stuff like that. And now that he's not doing that obnoxious Whedon dialogue thing, like, I'm totally behind it. So,
yeah, that's my number one for the season. Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for more. I'm going to be watching that one every week.
Mm-hmm.
You should pick one now.
Okay, well, I think we should probably talk about the other big show of the season, the easy second place in the poll and in discussion, which is Yuri on Ice.
Now, is it?
It is.
Or is it the Anna Twitter bubble?
No, it's not. It is not, actually, this time. Like, so I...
Oh,
people
the
like,
overhyped Anna Twitter bubble show.
No, that would be classical.
That totally flops on Blu-ray.
No,
and
no, that would be classical.
Everyone's like, oh, you can't believe how great the show is. Sales 20 units.
I'm not saying that it's going to sell well. I'm just talking about volume of... enthusiasm, and I don't mean an Anna Twitter bubble, I mean, like, anime Twitter bubble.
The Daily Streaming poll got a shit ton of votes this time. Mm-hmm. A ton. Like, more than usual. Mm-hmm. Yuri on Ice was, like, number two with a bullet.
Number two with a bullet.
50% of everybody that voted clicked on it.
Mm-hmm. And regardless, I do look outside of just the people I talk to on Twitter, and I try to look at the bigger picture. Like, I'm not gonna, like, look, I love Classical Lloyd. I love stuff like Yuri Kumarashi.
Fucking Classical Lloyd.
We'll get to that. But I'm not gonna say that that's...
Gun in mouth.
I am not gonna say that that's just the most popular stuff. I'm just saying, like, I love that stuff, but I like Yuri on Ice. It is also actually popular at this moment. Yes.
Cool. All right. So, it's good. So the first one. So we watched it. The first one last night. I hadn't gotten to it yet, mm-hmm. and we watched it last night. And all this hype after like a week, mm-hmm. I was like, all right, this is probably going to be like a Fox Searchlight thing with some nice animation, and it was. It was a Fox Searchlight thing with some nice animation. I didn't think it was anything too great. Like, mm-hmm. it was just a little oversold to me, which I don't know why I'm not used to that at this point.
I don't know why you're not
just
used
turn
to
everything
it.
Down to like yeah. a okay, if they're saying it's a 12, I will turn this all this hype in my brain down to like an 8 and mm-hmm. then I'll watch it there. I thought it was like a 7. Mm-hmm. It was pretty good. Mm-hmm. The second episode, which I just watched before we started taping, mm-hmm. I liked that one more than the first one, which I know sort of puts me as an outlier, but I liked so I wanted them to get those three characters together and sort of show us who they were and get them interplaying off each other. And once they're all, the three of them, uh-huh. to the two Yuris and Victor, uh-huh. who I kind of have a crush on. He's really cute. the three of them playing off each other uh-huh. was a really fun and cool dynamic. I also liked the direction a little bit more in the second one. I know that's kind of a weird thing to say, but the shot choice and everything, I liked a little more.
I like both of
the second one pulled me into the sort of sitcom-y aspects of this mm-hmm. in a way that I wasn't quite expecting, and now I just kind of... Now I'm along for it. I'm along for the ride. The first one was a little like, this isn't quite grabbing me. Mm-hmm. The character stuff in the second one is what pulled me in.
Right. Yeah, I was... the second one, I was fine with it. To me, the biggest thing about Yuri on Ice is not the story. It is the aesthetic, and I don't just mean aesthetic like aesthetic. I mean, like... It is also just the, I like Saya Yamamoto's sense of viscerality. I like the number one thing I come to for, the number one thing visually, not story-wise, that I come to anime for is viscerality, is tangibility, is something that you feel like you can feel or smell or touch something. That is what I come to anime for on a visual level. And Yamamoto gets that completely. Like, the weight of the bodies when they're skating, like the feel of an area, like which she's very big into location scouting, and she's also a fashionista. So all the fashion is based on real stuff that she's seen, and all the locations are based on real locations. And there's no rotoscoping in the show. Like they base it off of choreographed performances, obviously, but there's no rotoscoping. It is all, especially in the in the performance in the first episode. In case y'all didn't know, the stuff that they do is not humanly impossible, but it has literally never been done before. It is 10 points, like Olympics scoring points. It is 10 points above literally the highest scoring routine that has ever been performed in history. That's in the first episode. So that stuff is incredibly difficult to do. So if you're like, oh, they're just tracing some skater's routine. No, they had to make that up because no person has ever performed that before. So it's a little over the top, but it is extremely immersive and fun. And like, I like the story, but I haven't really gotten hooked into it yet. Mostly I'm just really impressed with the pacing and the aesthetic and the sense of a weight and heat.
Which I got more in the second one.
Right.
For some reason.
Well, you know, and I like Victor. I like that Victor is just obviously gay. Like, and not in a, like, look, LOL gay panic character or look stereotype. It's just sort of there, and it's fine, and it's just part of his character, and it's not really a big deal. And it's not even fetishy. It's not like, ooh, girls, look, he's gay. He just is. Which is kind of cool. I thought that was neat. And, you know, I'm interested in seeing more. I think it's an inviting, like, I think the enthusiasm comes from the fact that it's so inviting to all different kinds of audiences. Like, it's not exclusionary toward guys who might want to watch it. It's not exclusionary toward gay men who might want to watch it. But it is super fan servicey, and it's super, like, ladies. Like, it's like that, but it's not obtrusively so. It's quality programming. You know, it's good stuff. So, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good little show. I like it a lot. I didn't quite take to it that much on the first one, but that second one really grabbed me. So I'm excited to see more. Excited is a strong word. I'll watch it every week. Mm-hmm. I think it's right. Yeah. I look forward to everybody overreacting.
Yeah. you realize like we just,
no, that's good. That's what you want. I'm a curmudgeon, but mm-hmm. that's Tev. You absolutely want that. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like so we got Free and people freaked out over Free. But this is next level, like thirsty girls being served. And so the thirsty girls are going to get loud when they finally get served by a market that doesn't serve them like respectfully very often. So, you know, it's cool. Sure. Whatever. They're freaking out. It's great. Sure.
You're right. Okay. Hey, why don't we talk about March Comes In Like a Lion?
Oh boy.
The show about a depressed boy mm-hmm. who lives with three plucky ladies and a cat? Several cats?
Lots of cats.
Many cats. So this is directed by Shenmue, mm-hmm. and it is based on a manga mm-hmm. about a depressed boy who lives with three plucky ladies. So this is, like, super slow. It's, like, it adapts, like, literally one chapter. The entire first 5 minutes are he is depressed, and it's shots of him in the fetal position sinking underwater, and... shots of him walking with a frown on his face, and it's well directed. Shinbo knows what he's doing. If you like his thing, I kind of like his thing.
That's me personally. I'm not a fan.
I kind of like his thing when he's. This was fine. Mm-hmm. Like the backgrounds look really. It's beautiful.
It's
like,
a gorgeous
it's
show.
Absolutely
I love the
gorgeous
way it looks.
Show. And you know the imagery for depression was fine. It was pretty ham fisted. It was like he's sad.
He's drowning.
And the thing is though, it was like he's sad for like 15 fucking minutes, mm-hmm. and they don't get to anything else for a really long time. The other thing is that he seems exceptionally sad for what we know has happened to him, which is he beat his stepdad at shogi.
Well, not stepdad, like adoptive.
He beat
father.
His adoptive father at mm-hmm. shogi. There's some dark thing in his past, but. They're not telling me, and I get what they're doing. So there's kind of a tonal whiplash in this show, right? Where, like, the first half is like, he's sad. And the last, like, 7 minutes are these plucky ladies, these lovable ladies that he lives with being wacky and monkey cheese mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So there's kind of a tonal whiplash. And they're trying to show you, like, well, his external life and his interior life. And look at this huge contrast. How could this guy not be happy?
Right.
And I guess we'll get there. Mm-hmm. It's going too slow for me, though. Mm-hmm. And the next... I'm going to keep watching it. The next two better give me some idea of why this dude is so sad, because if it's literally like I have performance anxiety about shogi and I have issues with my dad, it needs to be a little bit more interesting than that. Because if you're gonna focus this much on depression imagery, basically think about it this way. If you have something floating on the surface mm-hmm. and you say this is about depression and you yank it just beneath the surface and it's like, okay, this is about depression at this level. Mm-hmm. If you keep showing me imagery, you spend 15 minutes dragging it to the bottom of the ocean and saying, this is about depression. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Mm-hmm. You have to justify that to me, story-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wallow in depression mm-hmm. unless you were saying something about it. Mm-hmm. So what's the point? Right. And so that's high demand for a single episode of a TV series. But definitely, a lot of people said this was bullshit because it went way too slow.
Mm,
and it was not adapting anywhere near as much of the manga as it could have mm-hmm. in the first 22 minutes.
Right, so my take on this. So of all the stuff that I didn't write up for Preview Guide, most of it was just, again, like I was really busy. I didn't have time to do as much writing as normal. But most of it I didn't bother going back to write up because I just agreed with what everybody else said and felt I couldn't add anything to the conversation. It was like, I can't add anything to this conversation. March Comes In Like a Lion is the one that I was like, I should write this up because my take on it is very different from all the other writers, but I just didn't have the time. So here's how I feel about March Comes In Like a Lion. So Shinbo, I have an issue with him as a director because he applies... He is... I had a friend who came up with this term that I think is pretty on point to how Shinbo directs. And it's like, as a... He's not so much a storyteller as he is an artisan, which means that he applies his very unique and very, like, trademark, okay, this is Shinbo's style, and it is a good style, it is interesting at the very least, to everything, regardless of what the tone is, regardless of what the story's goals are, regardless of what the shot demands emotionally or narratively. He applies his... like, a basically checklist. So you know it's his aesthetic immediately, but it doesn't necessarily serve It basically transforms whatever the original material was into Shinbo flavor, and Shinbo flavor is the same thing every time. Is basically the, and if you like that flavor, it's perfect for you. But if you don't, like I'm kind of over it, it's a little frustrating. Like the most frustrating version of this was Nisekoi, which Nisekoi did not demand. And I know people say, oh, it's Shinbo doesn't direct all of these because he wouldn't have the time. It's other people using his name at Shaft. We know that March Comes in Like a Lion is actually Shinbo, and maybe Nisekoi was one of Shinbo's doppelgangers, but whatever. It's still the same style. The fact that other people can take it and copy it perfectly kind of, you know. But anyway, so Nisekoi didn't demand a Shinbo style at all, and March Comes in Like a Lion seems like it half does and then half really doesn't, and so that bothers me. It's like, the sadness thing, like, is really undercut by the way that the tonal whiplash jumps to his happy life, because it will also show the protag being kind of wacky and happy and having wacky overreactions to his friends. And it's like, it's pulling me away from what has not really been firmly established about why he's feeling the way he's feeling.
Yeah.
And there's shots of the background, which... The background and the art design is really beautiful, and I feel like really adds to what they're doing, because the way the water is animated, it has an almost viscous quality. It's beautiful and it's inviting, and the premise of the story is that he lives by the river and the river sort of follows him wherever he goes, and so this water is pretty and it's showing you how pretty his outside life is, but it also has this viscous quality where it feels like it's following him and like sneaking behind him and looming a little bit, which is great. That's a great idea. But the rest of it was either like really trite observations about or metaphors about depression, or it was just sort of basking in the happy stuff that really didn't add anything. It basically was undercutting emotion or confusing me narratively. It felt unfocused. It felt like, okay, Shinbo is applying this shot that he loves. Hey, here's a big room with no ceiling. Here is an oblique shot of somebody's head. That kind of thing, like, without really thinking about, or maybe he thought about, but just doesn't translate, like, what the narrative goal of the shot is. And so, yeah, that my feeling on that is March Comes in Like a Lion feels like it is half kind of telling the story it wants to tell and half being pretty without really connecting with its goals very well. So, yeah, March Comes in Like a Lion kind of a mess to me. But I will definitely watch more. It's really pretty, but I was really frustrated with it for the same reason I'm frustrated with basically all of his work. So, there, yeah. Fucking March Comes in Like a Lion. Frustrating. So, you know.
Well, I thought it was interesting enough to watch more of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last couple of things here before we get to these Twitter questions. You were big on Flip Flappers.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm reviewing it this season, so I don't want to talk a whole lot about it, but...
Well, great, because yeah. I kind of shrugged at it. Uh-huh. Really cool art design. Kind of neat, I guess. Like, sort of Alice in Wonderland-y. Didn't make a lot of sense, but I think that's by design.
Right.
Actually, of course, that's by design. Yeah, it was okay. I feel like the aesthetic was... It's all right. It didn't seem that cool. The opening credits were really cool. Like, the first 5 minutes were awesome, and then after that, it was kind of like, yeah, it's all right, I guess. Mm-hmm. It didn't really grab me.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of waiting to see more. I like the aesthetic because it's not too busy, and it really could have been, like, extremely easily. But given how bold the color design is and how many visual concepts they're playing with, kind of Space Dandy style, it could have been too much really easily, and I felt like it never was. So I'm interested to see more. I'm interested to see where it's going. I like that the whole thing is basically a series of fairy tale references, which is kind of my wheelhouse. Like, I love that. Those ideas, I'm familiar with a lot of that stuff, so I kind of, that's why I decided I wanted to write about it, because I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. And also the design and the setup and the way that it was written kind of reminded me of like an adventure game, or like a Nintendo game or an adventure game or something like that, which is not really a style that I see in anime a lot. So yeah, I'm intrigued, I guess, but it's a little early to say what is, if anything, it's going to be about, except for probably girls almost kissing again, because there's definitely some Yuri subtext going on there in a way that I kind of liked, because it wasn't weird or gross or confusing. It was just like, oh, I think maybe these two have a thing for each other. So we'll see what happens. So, you know.
I'll read your write-ups.
Right.
Flip, flap. And I'll look at screenshots, because it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple more written down here. One of them's Keijo, which is about ladies slamming their titties together.
Fellas. Your girlfriend got the butt?
You know what? I wish... That's not true. I was going to say, like, if I could collectively erase one thing from public consciousness, it would be, at this point, Baby Got Back.
It's Butts
We need another butt song to reference.
I didn't.
We need another butt song to reference.
I didn't pick the most obvious line. I picked one from the
No, but we need a whole different song. There's no line from that you can quote where I'm not going to be like, ugh, baby got back.
I could quote Tootsie Roll or something, or Tambourine, but I don't think anybody remembers those. You want to look up Tootsie Roll or Tambourine for me? Or,
people remember that.
Anyway, there's plenty of buttons.
Anyway, so Keijo is an extremely straightforward fan service show that gets a lot of attention because of its absurd premise. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty well directed.
Yeah. I thought it was.
I liked the thick outlines.
The thick outlines.
I said outlines.
You say
the thick outlines. Big fan. I watched the first episode because everybody was like, hey, this is actually okay. I watched it. It is actually okay. It's a perfectly fine fan service sports anime. It's extremely upfront about what it is.
Right. The biggest problem with those things is when they're not upfront about what they are, or there's some sort of weird, like, attempt at like obfuscation or drama, or like when the camera acts like it is watching all of this surreptitiously. As if we're not, you know, as if we're, oh, this is a perfectly normal, a perfectly normal alternate universe where women tear each other's clothes off and try to kill each other, but you happen to be peeking in on the surreptitious cabin. Where Keijo is just like, puts you right in the middle of the action and is like, you're just here, and this is exactly what it looks like. And Monster Girls did that too, so I'm down for like, shows like Keijo or Monster Girls that are fan service but are just bald on the surface, like, this is boob action comedy, here you go. And so that's what this was, and it was like, yep, sure, this is fun.
Yeah. I'm, again, not going to watch more.
Right.
On my own.
On your own.
Accord.
So I haven't seen the second episode, but I heard that the school, so they attend an entire academy for butt and boob fighting, which is funny. I thought it was just going to be like them competing, but no, there's a school devoted to learning the art of butt and boob fighting. And the courses are called astronomy and boobology. So that's the kind of show that this is.
So they got like a 12-year-old to write it.
Yeah. I mean, I assume, astronomy.
They go to titty class, and then they go to ass class. Wait, that's trademark.
Ass class is a different one. No, they train by pushing, like, monster truck tires with their boobs.
You know what? If you were explaining this to somebody, they would go, so they go to, like, ass class? And you're like, no, that's...
That's a different anime.
That's a different show.
And they're like, oh, is that a different fan service anime?
You would actually...
No, it's for kids, and it's actually pretty clean.
Yeah. Anyway... The last show that I have written down is called Occultic Nine, which I didn't get through. Mm-hmm. I turned it off.
Yes.
Do you know why I turned off the show Occultic Nine?
Because you couldn't understand what the hell was going on.
Because I didn't understand what the fuck was going on, and it was boring as hell. So it looked like it was part of... You brought this up. It looked like sort of Ergo Proxy, Technolize, Serial Experiments, Lane, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Conspiracy theories.
Boogie Pop Phantom.
Edgelord Turn of the Century, like Matrix-y, like Internet. Yeah. Whoa, but conspiracy Internet.
Matrix,
you know,
Matrix
like that
inspired
thing.
Matrix-inspired late Cell or early DigiPaint, where all the colors are really washed out, nothing really has any outlines on it. It's lots of quick cuts and canted angles. And I don't love those shows, but I am really... that was the best thing about Occultic Nine, was that it had the balls or just the creativity to go back to that genre, because nobody's really done that.
Nobody's done it in a long time.
And it's like, oh, I remember this. Like, they don't make shows like this anymore, which is fine. But this used to be an entire subgenre of anime. Yeah, like heavily inspired by The Matrix, and We're Living in the New Millennium. And
Digital World.
Yeah, Nia Under 7 was another one like that, which wasn't really... It was supposed to be lighthearted. It was supposed
couple
to be
a couple of
anime
shows, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's just how that looks. And so, yeah.
And for whatever reason, this also has all of the women, three of the women have like shelf-sized tits. Like they're distractingly like porno, like fetish size.
They are this should not appear in anything but a hentai. Like not even a fan service shows like Keijo or High School DD do not have characters with this big of boobs.
It's a fetish, but so it was kind of off-putting.
But this is not this is not a hentai show. So when you have a character that has double J's, like it's like this is not.
And there's a lot of focus on it. Yeah.
Nobody can really like focus on the very dark spotlight.
Super distracting and unnecessary
because this woman has double J's.
Yeah. So anyway, I turned it off because I had no fucking idea what was going on. I liked the way it looked. Like so, I put a little at so like Occultic Nine, Flip Floppers, March Comes In Like a Lion, and Drifters. all four of these shows have outstanding art direction. They look really good. There's a wide variety of styles. Mm-hmm. Like, once again, anime artistically, if you look at a single season, you are going to see an enormous array of unbelievably good design work. Like, I feel like I'm seeing stuff that I just feel, it feels like a lot of people are operating at the top of their game from a design perspective right now. Mm-hmm. People are getting really creative. They're trying new things.
Yeah.
Trying to make their show stand out a little bit more. Trying to make it look different. Mm-hmm. I'm loving it. I'm in heaven over here watching all, like, every time the show is like, let's try this completely different. Please, please give it to me. I want it, you know?
Oh, do we want to go into how much you hated Classicaloid and why?
Okay, so Classicaloid was a big...
Also looked great.
It looked great.
Beautiful show.
Great color design and, I mean, like, the stupid, like, weird, like, Oda, like, what's his, the One Piece guy? Ichiro Oda of wacky, mascot-y design aside... I liked the color work, and I really liked... There was a sequence with the Beethoven guy. So, Beethoven, just briefly, tell us what the premise of Classicaloid is.
Okay, so there's this girl who came from a rich family, and so she has this giant mansion that their family was, like... Their legacy is something that has to do with music that has not really been clarified, but, like... her grandma owned this enormous music-themed mansion, and then when her grandma died, her dad was supposed to take care of it, but he was a weird, crazy, eccentric, mad scientist, and he blew all their life savings and ran off to conduct weird experiments somewhere, and then his wife left him, and so left the daughter behind all alone. And so she's been looking after this house waiting for him to come back, but it's been foreclosed on, so she has to, you know, she can't afford to keep the upkeep, so she's got to have it demolished and turn it into an empty lot, basically, so she can, because she can't afford to upkeep the house that's been foreclosed on. But living in the house is her best friend, who is also a weird eccentric, who reminds her a lot of his dad, and also Beethoven and Mozart, who were apparently transported from the past in her father's time machine that he built somewhere else, and have been squatting in the mansion, and they are wacky versions of Beethoven and Mozart that are kind of based on their... Like, their personalities are the same as the historical accounts. Like, Mozart is a pervert who loves roller skating around the house, and Beethoven is obsessed with fate and kind of angsty, and for some reason loves gyoza. That's the one. So of the tics, I understood all of them and what they were referencing, except that Beethoven loves gyoza.
I was going to ask you if that's based on something.
I think it's a pun or something.
Because if it's just like, here's a joke that isn't funny at all, they shouldn't have spent 15,000 minutes on it.
They shouldn't have. So
they shouldn't have spent the entire episode on that stupid gyoza joke.
I don't understand why, but everything else made sense to me. But like, yeah, so, but obviously, anyway, the point is the show is obviously aimed at families. Like, it airs in a time slot for families in Japan. It's not a late night anime. It's sunrise. So it's, but the gist is that for some reason Beethoven and Mozart and also Bach and Stravinsky and Tchaikovsky, who we have not met yet, but like a bunch of other composers, have magical powers. And so they use their magical powers to save the mansion. And obviously there's going to be like fights and stuff involving giant robots and the power of music. And that's the show. And it's stupid, but I really dug it. And then Zach was very upset by it for some reason.
I wasn't, like, very upset by it. That's not
I was like,
accurate.
Really? What's... I understand liking it.
I just thought it was a big, stupid waste of time that wasn't funny at all. Like, it didn't have a single funny... It was just monkey cheese. Like,
right.
Like little kid monkey cheese. Like, yelling random stuff monkey cheese. Mm-hmm. The personalities that they grafted onto Bach and the other guy, like... They don't make any fun. It's just monkey cheese. It's just like, isn't this wacky? And it's like, man, you're trying so fucking hard. I have not laughed once this entire time.
I mean, they made a lot of
You're hammering
sense.
These unfunny jokes into the right. ground. Right. It's all super hyperactive, like I'm six and can't sit still, and it has to, like, just not for me.
Right. And I understand
fucking
that.
Fucking not
I understand that.
For
I wouldn't
me.
Say, I understand that. I wouldn't say it was completely monkey cheese. I would say their personalities are rooted a little bit in history, only it's cartoonified. But yeah,
monkey cheese.
Well, you know what they don't shout random stuff. It's just the joke is that Mozart loves to roller skate because he did, and yeah, and I don't know why Beethoven loves gyoza, but I know why he's obsessed with fate. Like I got that. That's I understand what that's supposed to be. But like, yeah, the show is silly and it is for families, so you kind of have to just take your you have to put your little kid hat on, basically, when you watch it. But I really dug it. I understand completely that it's a niche thing, but you know, you go Sunrise, you make this like PBS show about the power of music that has really nice production values. Yeah.
Right.
And they have a pet shoebill for no discernible reason. They have a pet shoebill, which is an endangered species that is very cool.
Anyway. A pet what?
Shoebill, pelican.
Oh, right. Yeah. More randomness for its
but
own
it's
sake.
Adorable. It's, you know.
Randomness for its own sake.
Anyway, I understand completely why you didn't take it. Also, like, it. I like dead composers. Like, I like music study a lot, so that's also an appeal. If you're not interested in that, you probably will not get a whole lot out of this, but it's cool.
Yeah. All right. Classical Lloyd. I thought it was a big load of shit.
Right.
Looks good.
Mm-hmm. We have like we haven't talked about any of the sequels, but there's a million sequels this season, and they're all pretty consistent with. I can't think of any that aren't consistent with what we've come to expect from whatever the franchise is. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, let's get to these Twitter questions, shall we? We have a ton of them. Uh-huh. Well, we don't have a ton of them. We have a few. Let's get to them. Matt Ellie asks, "Do you think the fact that 10 sports series are airing is an anomaly or evidence of a trend?" I mean, it's not all Fujoshi Sports.
Which one's not?
Is it all Fujoshi Sports?
I'm trying to think of a sports show that's not Fujoshi Sports, but
that is a trend. Something they're cashing in on.
I'm trying to think of one that's. I think they're all aimed at girls. I think they're all aimed at girls.
Hey, you know what was popular? Free and Haikyuu.
Yes.
Well, do you know what you can animate cheaply that involves a lot of men's bodies, athletic men's bodies?
Rugby.
Sports shows.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rugby and other stuff. Oh, yeah, people said ping pong girls. Well, yeah.
Scorching ping pong girls.
Nobody gave a shit about that, so unfortunately.
They'll scorch you.
Oh, right. What am I talking about?
En fuego.
Long riders. So here's the thing. The reason I was like, I don't see any is because I was thinking. Because
you're blind to them, Jacob.
No, because I was thinking of the stuff that we're covering. So long riders and ping pong girls. Were not popular enough to get covered because they're animated like butt and have no like distinguishing qualities. So, yeah, that was the issue there.
Yeah, Long Riders. That's a Daisuke exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, right. Okay. Alistair Scott asks, would you say the claim that Keijo is a legitimate sports series is a little half-assed? Yeah. Yeah, sure, yeah. The point is yeah. I mean...
I'd say it's both. Por que no los dos?
Okay. That's legit. You know what? I agree with you.
Yeah, you can follow the action. Like, if you want to say it's a sports series because it's seriously invested in the sport, it's a little over the top, you can easily follow the rules and you can, like, track who has what traits and, like, strategize how they're going to beat a match or whatever. Like, you could do that with Keijo. It's not just, like, here's some tits, who cares about the story. Like, they really explain the sport in detail and who's has what advantages and stuff like that. It's just all TNA, though.
Mm.
So, I mean, yeah, it's both of those things, I would say. It has both appeals, which is why it scores so... Like, usually fan service shows don't get as many votes in the poll and stuff like that. This did really well in the poll, and I'm going to watch it. So, you know, yeah. I think Keijo is pretty good as fan service. Fan service stuff goes.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, in that case, I guess it's both. Christopher asks, with the rise of streaming services, will we have more shows that aren't burdened with having to be 12 to 26 episodes? I mean, I bet there's going to be a lot of experimentation. You're going to see a lot of different kinds of things in the next couple years.
I would say so.
Yeah. Planetarian, I think, was probably a pretty good idea, and I feel like you could do a lot more like that. And I'm on board for that kind of thing.
I cannot imagine Planetarian having been a 13-episode. It was great at the length it was. I liked it. I would say it was one of the best things that season, but it was... just six, and then it was over. Five. No, it was five episodes, and it was over. And it was perfect length for it.
Yeah. All right. Stefan asks, a large number of short-form anime have appeared this season. Is this a case of studios minimizing their financial risks? I mean, not necessarily. It just means there's a lot of short-form anime. It means there's a lot of those slots to fill.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those are Chinese co-pros this season.
Yeah.
So
the only people dipping their toe in.
The only full-length Chinese co-pro this season was Blood of Wars, which... was bad, but oh well.
Brandon asks, based on first impressions, how would you compare the portrayal of depression and March Comes In Like a Lion to that in Orange? Orange's depiction of a depressed kid seemed pretty on point to me. His behavior seemed very realistic. March Comes In Like a Lion is taking place inside of his head.
too early to say, too.
It's too early to say, of course, but he said based on first impressions. It takes place entirely inside of his head, and so you're getting his own perception of his depression, whereas Orange, you're seeing it from an exterior view.
Right.
So if March Comes In Like a Lion took place from the perspective of the one of the girls, mm-hmm. it would be probably a little bit more like Orange, because he would just seem flighty and distracted and sad, mm-hmm. and not, and he wouldn't be around very much,
right?
Which is kind of what happens in Orange.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at two different things. I think, you know, comparing them like that is a little tough because of that difference in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're both fine. March Comes In Like a Lion just seems over the top to me. That's all.
Yeah, and it's too early to say, really.
Firquin Root asks, I didn't watch this. To Be Hero or Not To Be Hero?
Not To Be Hero. So this is a Nabashin. Nabashin is back. He made this thing. It is great. Unwatchable. That's my only comment. Because I wrote about it for the shorts thing. It is basically unwatchable. So, yeah.
Well, I hope Nabashin bought himself a car or something with the paycheck he got from making that. All right. Steve asks, hopes for Voltron Season 2. Boy, I have not watched that.
I watched the first couple episodes. It was
didn't grab you.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a little basic, I guess. Nothing really hooked me beyond the basic. Like, I love the way it looks, but it was a very what you see is what you get kind of kid show, and it didn't stick its hooks into me beyond that. So.
Let's see here. GBUFO asks, does anyone predict Flip Flappers to be as solid as it was? I don't think so.
No, I actually wasn't. I was because I've seen so many of these things go awry where it's like, this is led by the production team and we don't even know who's attached to write, and it's basically every visual idea in the world, like, I've seen that happen so many times that I wasn't expecting Flip Flappers to be as cohesive as it is and is intriguing and, like, not confusing. There's very little dialogue in it, which helps. Like, there's a couple lines of dialogue, but mostly it's you know, whereas you have something like Rolling Girls where nobody ever shut up and the exposition didn't really add anything to the aesthetic. It just made it more convoluted. So I think Flip Flapper's kind of doing the bare minimum and trying to lead you in gently. So that's good.
Hmm.
So, I mean, dialogue wise, it's doing a lot aesthetically. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It just, boy, it didn't grab me. Jeff Tebbets asks, with rugby and figure skating ticked off the list, what relatively niche sports anime would you want to watch next? Well, I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what? Like, that's not the sport itself.
Mm-hmm.
Is not what I'm interested
in. It's never the point.
Yuri on Ice is telling a story about characters that is interesting.
Uh-huh.
I would like to see more stuff that is not the standard. Just, it's the standard sports narrative, except with a bunch of gay boys. Like,
right.
Something. You know, give me something fresh,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be on board.
Right.
You know?
Or, I mean, like, they do have the sports shows for girls. We mentioned, like, oh, Long Riders and Ping Pong Girls and other stuff like that has existed. It's just not...
Someone in the chat says ice hockey, and that actually sounds good.
Yeah. Keijo counts, actually. Keijo is a sports show. That is a sport. They didn't actually invent
that sport.
That's
not a real sport.
It is, actually. It's not a real competitive sport.
Not like this.
Yeah. No, they turned it into...
Well, that's like saying they made a show about competitive kick the can.
Exactly, but at least they made it
then
into...
It's not that's not a sport.
No, but they made it into one.
Well, then you can't say it's a real sport, because it's not. It's just a game people play.
Yes, exactly. But my point is...
It's a real game.
My point is they're treating it as a sport.
I believe I won this argument.
No, okay, what? Okay, so we're gonna get a deep cut here. Remember the Mecca basketball show?
Yeah, Basquash.
Basquash. So
that was a LaShawn Thomas joint, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's a fake sport, but a real sports show. So that's what I'm saying Keijo is.
No, basketball's a real thing.
But they're Mecca playing basketball.
No, but that's basketball. That's not the same.
Somebody else come up with a fake
tic tac toe, like hopscotch.
Yeah.
Those things you would. It's a competitive. They took a game and turned it competitive for the show, but it's not like a sport,
right? Well, my point is,
like,
it's
this
a
is a
show.
This was a sport on like American Gladiators.
Yes, so
but that was for
into,
show.
Yeah, but they turned it into a real competitive. The premise is that it is a competitive sport that you can get paid as a professional athlete to do, which is in the show. So therefore, it is definitely a sports show.
I think we're going to find out what the listeners think of
this. Free competitive green light, red light. Yeah, if you turned that into an actual thing and that was the premise, yeah.
Sasquatchulus asks, out of the butt shows this season, which do you think will sell the best? Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, huh.
Oh, boy, that's a tough... So it predicting those things is increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm. Japan, it does not have the same market
fascination.
Interests. Market interests, yes.
Ass so, fascination.
Well, no, they love butt shows over there too. I'm just saying that we can't predict what is popular over here based on like thing that's going to sell real well in Japan. Token Rambo. What are we not covering? Token Rambo. Things are going to sell well in Japan. Utapri. What are we not covering? Utapri. So you know, like
yeah, no one gives a shit about boy idols.
No,
here.
Nobody gives a shit about boy idols, but they sell real good in Japan. So it's hard to guess. If I had to guess off the top of my head of the stuff that features butts, I don't know. I think I think Keijo is probably going to do the standard 5-6K for a fan service show that's done well. And Yuri on Ice could either flop or be a hit. Who knows? But it seems to be generating a lot of discussion. So we'll see what happens.
We shall see. All right. Michi asks, is the gay subtext in Yuri on Ice gratuitous, or do you think it's got purpose other than trolling the hell out of nerd boys? I don't buy your... I get your question, but your premise is flawed. That's the story they're telling. Mm-hmm. The way nerd boys react to it is meaningless, and to call it... That's the story they're telling.
Mm-hmm.
The story is about a bunch of gay men.
It is gratuitous. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's not gratuitous. That's the story.
I mean,
like I just,
Victor's
I
gay. I don't know about the other two. Like it is subtextual. We don't know if they're going to make it explicit.
They had him like blushing, like yeah. like, I'm just so happy to see him.
Yeah,
that's why my
I
heart
know.
Is pitter patter. Give me a fucking break.
Oh yeah, I know. But is it?
It's a gay show. It's a romance.
Yes, it may remain subtextual. We don't really know because it's.
I don't think so.
I hope not, but you never know.
I'm just saying
it's
not,
aimed at women though, so it's aimed at women. It's not. There's.
I'm just saying it's not. Gratuitous.
No. Gratuitous is a silly word for this. It is definitely the story that
I reject summarily the mm-hmm. idea that there's too much gay stuff in Yuri on Ice.
Absolutely. That's not
full so rejection. The iron wall comes down. No.
Yeah,
you're wrong.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I hesitate to say if it's
if anything
stuff.
It's not gay enough, says me.
Yeah. I hesitate to say that it is gay so much as it is aimed at women and therefore homoerotic. So I don't really know if it's going to be made textual or not. But is it gratuitous? Of course not. Like, of course, if ice skating is an incredibly gay sport, and obviously they...
I just want to make a quick correction here. I'm sorry. Besquash was a Thomas Romaine joint.
Oh.
Not LaShawn Thomas. I'm sorry for getting that wrong.
Right.
LaShawn has a show on Crunchyroll coming up that I'm excited about.
Mm.
But I want to just make sure I got that right.
Damn, getting your Thomas's crossed.
I'm sorry, Thomas, for Maine. Anyway.
Got our Thomas's crossed.
You were saying.
All I was saying is, like, it remains subtextual because the show is aimed definitely at women. However, it's not gratuitous because, yeah, like, the story is definitely about Yuri's being comfortable with himself sexually because that's what Victor is trying to bring out of him to make him a better skater. That's explicit. And he's trying to do the opposite for the Russian Yuri.
That's fine, then. If that's the story that they're telling...
Yeah.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's the story that they're telling.
Right.
It's still not... Like, they don't have to fuck in order for that stuff to have value and
right.
for it to be good storytelling and meaningful representation and good gay characters having a gay story together. Like,
right.
that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's all fine.
Right.
So, I don't want to criticize it for any of that.
No, like, I was just discussing for what reason is this put in here? What is it trying to achieve? I was just deep diving a little.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, I have strong opinions on that. Let's see. Speaking of which, Corey Barnes asks, will Yuri on Ice be this season's Anna Twitter hit that's doomed to underperform? Probably. I hope not, but probably.
I don't... Yeah, it's not an Anna Twitter hit. It's a genuine hit.
I hope so.
With Western audiences, I don't have no idea what Japan...
We'll see what those pre-order numbers say.
Yeah, exactly. People are mentioning it. So Crunchyroll translated before we get off of Yuri on Ice.
It might be like Joker Game. Someone says, "Yeah, we'll see."
Joker Game sold great.
It did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but people didn't care about it over here because it was about. But anyway. So before we get off of this topic, I wanted to bring up. So Crunchyroll's subtitles for the second episode where Victor and Yuri are hanging out have him repeatedly, like almost obsessively, asking if Yuri has a girlfriend. That is not what he's saying in Japanese. No criticism. They're just translation is an art, not a science. But for anyone curious as to why are you saying he's gay, he says he has a girlfriend. He's saying koibito, which is not gendered. He's asking if he has a lover, and he's trying to tell him about his own lovers, etc. And Yuri's like, "That's I don't really want to. That's nice. I don't want to hear about that." as he's not saying girlfriend, he is saying lover, as in he does not specify. So,
if which that, seems important.
That seems important to me, but I don't want to follow the translator too much. But you know, like he did not say girlfriend. He's you know, anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh well.
Well, that actually concludes our Twitter question portion. We now have time for a couple questions from the chat before we wrap up and take off for the evening. Do we have any questions from our live chat audience? Penguin Truth asks, which simuldub are you looking forward to? Jacob, who has an opinion on things like which simuldub are you looking forward to? Because I don't.
I mean, I guess Eerie on Ice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think it, yeah?
Sure. Well, yeah, because I can see showing that to...
They should have Yuri Lowenthal play all the characters.
Every single one.
Every character.
Yes. That would be fantastic.
And have him do it in a really cold room.
Mm-hmm.
See, why don't they put me in charge of marketing this stuff?
Yuri's delivering He's delivering all his lines through,
he's
like, shivering.
He's got to dub the episode live, play all the characters in a freezing cold room. Yuri on ice.
I'm going to teach you how to ice skate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so we're going to be doing a lot more coverage of simuldubs. For a little while, we were sort of kind of covering them a little bit in Daily Streamer, but we're doubling down our efforts.
Yeah, this time when there's premieres, we will talk about them in the Daily Streaming thing.
We're codifying them as part of the Daily Streaming team's duties, which it kind of wasn't before now, but it is now. It will be now.
And now, because of the funny role split, it kind of makes it easier to remember this stuff, because they are putting out, they just put out like a very detailed schedule of when new dubs are going to come out, because that is their entire purview now with Crunchyroll handling licensing. So yeah, we're going to talk about those in the streaming reviews.
Yep. Jesse B asks, with Funimation pulling titles from Netflix, do you think there's a future for third party titles on that platform? Who knows if there's a future for any third party anything on Netflix? Mm-hmm. On Netflix,
right.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, whoever wants to play ball with them and their prices will have shit on Netflix for sure. All right, do we have any? We can take one last question here before wrapping up for the night. Oh, here we go. Marco Max asks, would you want to see more shows attempt what Danganronpa 3 did with two connected shows running simultaneously? Well, I can't imagine people are going to attempt that very often.
No, like
holy cow, what a writing challenge.
Kodaka was crazy to do that in the first place. And though Danganronpa 3 had its problems, the structure actually wasn't one of them. The intertwining structure never really had a problem. There were problems in the story that he came up with by the end. But, That guy likes to create weird structural nightmares and challenges for himself. I imagine most writers want to make it easy on themselves, considering how hard it is to produce anime on a schedule to begin with. So I don't anticipate we'll see much of that in the future, but I think that was just his, like, yep, I'm going to challenge myself again. And it's like, you do that, buddy. He keeps doing that to himself. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, we'll see. Okay, all right. That wraps us up.
Mm-hmm.
Fall season... encapsulated.
Yes.
Look forward to the Daily Streaming Reviews on Anime News Network.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week for sure with a new episode of AnCast. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the chat for showing up.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great time, Jacob.
I had a great time, too.
All right. We'll see y'all next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the chat for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. I'll see y'all next week.